Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert.
Two-part shower-doer two guy.
Two-part shower-doer.
That's what they call him.
Mr. Moving Man.
Yeah, good times.
Ooh la la. And Hottie Patati Schmidt is coming to us from the Bay Area. What's up, Hottie Patati?
Hello. How are you guys?
We're jazzy. Thanks for asking.
Cool.
We're good.
Yeah, so we're talking about reactive hypoglycemia, and we're doing a case study that's long. Waleed.
Sorry.
Yeah. He's a trainer. He's very ripped. He's very jacked.
I want to see his picture.
He's not feeling so great.
Aw, poor Waleed.
Yeah. So we're going into this in-depth case. So if you didn't hear part one of our reactive hypoglycemia episode, go back and listen to that, because we're not going to do that. We're not going to summarize.
Go backwards.
It. Yeah, that's
no,
too much.
It's too much.
We're moving forward in life.
That's right.
We got a lot to do.
And if you haven't liked us on Facebook, go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all the show topics that we'll be doing for the future. You guys can ask any questions, or you can even give us a show topic, and we will try to accommodate you.
Okay, so last week we left off. We talked about the medications that Waleed was using. He had been using some PPIs and went off of them again. And then we talked about a lot of his symptoms that have kind of come up since. And he has this fainting, dizzy, like he's falling like all the time kind of thing. And a real lack of energy where he can really only like train one client and then go home and just be a blob on the couch kind of thing. And I experienced the same, you know, a similar thing back when I was on a lot of PPIs and all that kind of stuff too. So now I want to kind of list some of the supplements that he has tried and what his experience was with those.
Okay, the supplements are apple cider vinegar, which helped my arrhythmia and reflux, but not the dizziness. I stopped taking it because it seemed to make my dizziness worse. MCT oil or coconut and coconut oil. Used to take a tablespoon an hour before working out, but since I can't really work out anymore, I just cook with coconut oil. Zinc carnosine. Tried it for a week to help with my hunger pain after eating, but it didn't really make a difference, so I stopped it. Buffered vitamin C after breakfast, but seemed to make me nauseous, so not regular on it. Natural Calm magnesium, 1 teaspoon every night in a glass of water. That should be in the day, huh?
Good one, Kenna. Good call.
Everything that pertains to me.
Right? Kenna knows this stuff.
Limonene. I should have known that one because I took it. Took one pill and started falling asleep instantly, so I didn't take it anymore. Stop today. Also, I can't seem to be able to stop losing weight no matter
how. You missed the line.
Where?
Mastic gum.
Oh, mastic gum. Took 2 grams. What is it?
2 grams.
Yeah, okay. Took 2 grams for a week until I started getting super constipated, so I just stopped today. But I can't seem to be able to stop losing weight no matter how much I eat. Lost 10 pounds so far. You're not going to get any sympathy from me there on that one. Are we doing numbers? Are we
Not
stopping?
Yet. Let's talk about some of these supplements real quick. So one thing with apple cider vinegar is that it helps to acidify the stomach a little bit. And if someone needs a little bit of boost on their digestion, maybe just a little help of acidifying a little bit more, sometimes apple cider vinegar can be enough and the person can see amazing results from using that. But for most people, especially if they're having like reflux symptoms where the situation is severe enough that they're experiencing that, apple cider vinegar is usually not enough to make the stomach acidic enough to help really digest the food. Most people not only need to use HCL supplements, but they need to work up to a full dose of 5 capsules per meal. And we teach people how to do that in our almost free digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. But Will, what else about ACV? What about that pushing him even more anabolic?
Making him more like the apple cider vinegar doing
that?
Yeah, it can have that impact. Again, though, I think like the bigger thing with correcting that, because in some ways he is in an anabolic imbalance in certain metabolic respects, and then in others he's very, very catabolic at the same time, like with the weight loss going on. And
his body breaking himself down, right?
Yeah, which is kind of like, other than the biomarkers, like that is what we mean when we say catabolic, this tissue breakdown state. So his body's doing kind of both. And that's totally possible.
Well, it's totally possible if you think about it this way, because think about it that the body could be stuck in this rebuilding state. But to rebuild things, you need resources to build a house. So it's almost like his body is constantly building, but at the same time, it's also shopping at the grocery store, and his tissues are the grocery store.
Yeah.
And constantly breaking it down.
And to be fair to the whole anabolic, catabolic state, like, because it is such a broad number of different facets of physiology that we're talking about, when we use the terms catabolic and anabolic, it's totally possible to be in both. Just like your nervous system can be doing certain things that are generally categorized as sympathetic activity or fight or flight state. And at the same time, it can also be doing some things that are parasympathetic or the rest and digest state. For example, sex activates both. It's both aspects of your nervous system are activated during sexual intercourse.
Right, and Will's going to demonstrate that for us.
Yeah, all right.
It's not a paradox, but it's totally possible. Like, there are some things, the way his cells are accessing fuel or not accessing fuel, and the pH imbalances that are occurring, they have a more anabolic tilt to it, but he's also in a tissue breakdown state. And ultimately, like, to get back to your question about apple cider vinegar, I think the more important thing is that we need to fix digestion. Like, we've got to get that going on, and apple cider vinegar may have some helpful things that can help provide some enzymes, maybe slightly shift the pH towards a more acidic state. But it's important to know that it's not acidic enough by any means, right, to actually break down protein. There may be some useful benefit from some of the microorganisms in the apple cider vinegar killing some of the more pathogenic bacteria that's present in his gut and elsewhere in his digestive system. But it's not acidic enough to do the job of breaking down protein. For that, it needs to be crazy super acidic, like a pH of around 1 or 2. And that is what's required for pepsin to do its job of breaking down protein. And that pH will also do a lot more to kill off the pathogenic bacteria that is probably in his stomach. We haven't identified for sure that it is in his stomach. It could be more in his small intestine, or it could be in both places,
right,
or in his large intestine. But he should try to get a figure out on that, like from breath tests and stool samples, to see what's off and where, and then take action and then recheck and see, all right, did I make any seeming improvements in any of those respects? But D-limonene and other antimicrobial agents might be really, really useful to use in conjunction with HCL supplementation.
Right, and let's just take a pause for a second and say how proud I am of Kenna that we've mentioned sex in the last 2 episodes and she has not gotten vulgar, or we haven't had to bleep her out in any way.
I'm dead inside.
Yeah, you've come
dead,
a long way. Good job. Because like the first 15 or 20 episodes, you hear just like giggle, 7 or 8 yeah, words, yeah, and the rest of the show is just bleeps.
Beep, yeah.
Yeah,
well, I'm married.
All right, so maybe that you get rid of that, a lot of the cussing and stuff.
All of that's gone.
Okay, that's good. So, you know, you had something you were going to...
Oh, I was just going to say, last week you mentioned, Will, about the D-limonene, like he took one pill and then he stopped it. Like it might, you know, you might have to try these things a little longer.
Good. A way to explain this and the way that he's going to know this is it's going to be like that client that came to you and said, well, I worked out and I didn't really lose weight.
Exactly.
I did a workout. Like,
sometimes you've got to work through it a little bit.
Sometimes it takes a while for things to work. You know, and he also mentions using zinc carnosine. And this can be really effective if the infection in your stomach is H. pylori, which when someone has an infection in their stomach, it's almost always something and H. pylori. Like in most cases, if someone has a stomach infection, H. pylori is at least part of it. But zinc carnosine is one of the things that I use when someone has an H. pylori infection to help wipe that out. But to make that effective, you got to use like 6 other things. And D-limonene is one of those.
Pepto-Bismol.
That can be one factor that you use for a part of it. There's some other things. Pylorosin is another supplement that can be very effective. But these things, one at a time, just zinc carnosine, is not going to be very effective when you're trying to wipe out H. pylori, because they're hard to wipe out. They kind of climb up into the mucus barrier and kind of hide there. Mastic gum is an interesting one, which is another one of the things that I use with H. pylori, but it's just a piece of the puzzle. It's basically like it creates like this mummy effect, like you're mummifying all the bacteria in your stomach, and it kind of helps to safely wash it out of the body. But when the bacteria climbs up to the mucus barrier, they're not going to get washed away.
But you have that whole H. pylori like protocol somewhere.
Yeah, if you go to kickitinthenuts.com and in the search bar, just put in H. pylori, and you would be able to find a big protocol, an article that I have about H. pylori. But again, it makes sense that using a little bit of zinc carnosine. The problem is that when you're using natural substances to improve a problem with your body, you have to be a lot more aggressive than, improving a symptom with a drug. You know, a lot of painkillers, it's going to work in 30 minutes. But when you're really trying to fix an underlying cause, you're looking at weeks, months, and sometimes longer to really fix problems when you're using natural substances to do that. They're just not as aggressive, and that can really be a good thing.
It's been going on a long time, so it's not going to be fixed overnight.
Right.
And that magnesium thing, like, shouldn't that be in the morning?
Do you want to explain that to him, Ken?
I will, because it makes you more catabolic. So if you're taking it at night, then that's just going to make you be catabolic at night, which you don't want to be. You want to be anabolic and catabolic in the day.
Nailed it.
Hey.
That's another point that, you know, Will was just talking about the anabolic-catabolic paradigm. I want to make sure that people understand that neither of those things are bad. We want both of those things to happen. We want to be catabolic during the day, and we want to be anabolic during the day. At night, I mean. It's when people get stuck too far in one direction for too long that problems can occur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What other supplement did we miss, Will, here that we might want to touch on?
Let's see. He said massive gum, apple cider, zinc, limonene. Well, he talked about a buffered vitamin C, which I'm not really a fan of. Like, I like the non-buffered kind because it's more active as an antioxidant, and it also can help with the constipation that he seems to have created for himself. But even beyond that, we talked about D-limonene, and we talked about H. pylori protocols and things that we put in there. And I just want him to really, really stay focused on getting a good assessment of what exact, like, maybe not exact, but sometimes exact through breath tests or stool samples, you can figure out which pathogenic strains are present. And then there's different things that can be good at killing off the different ones. And our friend and colleague, Dr. Michael Ruscio, goes into great depth with this sort of work. And he does work with people in person here in the Bay Area, but also remotely by working in conjunction with other labs that you can have stool samples done or breath tests done. So he can help assess and assign different protocols. And he'll do all sorts of crazy, like cyclic antimicrobial protocols to help kill off the pathogens, because they're little microorganisms that want to live, and they've been at this whole living thing way longer than humans, and right. They're way more successful as a kingdom of microorganisms than humans are. So don't just think like one cap of D-limonene is going to do the trick of destroying all these like super like sophisticated microorganisms. You've got to take a more strategic approach if your life is really impacted by this. And D-limonene is one really great tool that does seem to work a lot of the time, but there's way more stuff that's available to you if you tap into that. So working with someone like him or another functional medicine doctor that is going to do the right lab test to get a sense of what's actually present in your system and then track the response of their protocols, of your body to the protocols, that's what I would do. You know, I would just hone in on that and stay focused on that and know that the other symptoms like the dizziness and the muscle cramping and fatigue, that'll all get better once you get your root system back.
And another thing that I see very commonly is that people that seem to having a lot of symptoms that would indicate that they have a severe bacterial infection in their stomach, which is very common if someone has been on a PPI at all. Because when you're on a PPI, you turn off your stomach acid, which turns off the doorman. So now anybody that comes in on the food you eat is going to set up camp and have kids, and they're going to go to college, and they're going to have a keg party. So that's almost always the case if you've been on a PPI. But for these individuals who start D-limonene, the first dose is often uncomfortable. Like, they don't feel well after they do it because you're kind of pissing off all the bacteria and they're going nuts, and that's activating your immune response. And, you know, so that's a lot of resources that have to go towards that havoc that is going on. And of course, you might be tired or even have some discomfort in your stomach. But by the second or third dose, a lot of those individuals like, oh, I'm not having that problem anymore. And then the bacteria is low enough that they can start to take the other steps that are going to help improve digestion, like using the HCL capsules and stuff like that, that we'll talk about in just a little bit. Another point with the vitamin C is that if you were to use an ascorbic acid, just straight ascorbic acid, it's not going to function like vitamin C, but it could help lower your urine pH, make you a little less anabolic, and that may reduce how overbearing your insulin is acting towards carbohydrates. So that may reduce some of that sugar crashing that's apparently possibly causing a lot of stress to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's move on.
All right, we're going to look at some of the numbers. That and Dr. Ruscio's cute, too. So.
Yeah, I really like that guy, and he knows things. I like it when people know stuff.
He's on Facebook. He could, you know,
yeah,
look at his page, maybe read some stuff. All right, pre-dinner, blood pressure, 123 over 64, pulse, 52 BPM, blood sugar, 95 milligrams. Just 95?
Yeah.
No. Body temp, 98.8. Urine pH, 6.5. Saliva pH, 7.0.
So when we see those pHs closer together like that, it's often one of the possible indications of being a little bit over anabolic. But also that urine pH of 6.5 is very commonly going to correspond with insulin that's overly aggressive. So that's one thing to consider there, is just taking some steps to lower that urine pH a little bit could be beneficial.
Okay, 2 hours post-dinner. Blood pressure, 122 over 65. Pulse, 57. Blood sugar, 110. Urine pH, 6.5. Saliva pH, 7.0. Breath rate, 12 per minute. Body temp, 98.2.
Do you want to touch some on the low breath rate, Will?
Yeah, that ties in with, there's a number of different factors that can influence breath rate, like how strong your heart is at circulating the blood. But one of the biggest things that we see in assessing body chemistry is the slow or fast oxidizer imbalance, which we sometimes call a fat burner if your breath rate is slower, and carb burner if your breath rate's faster. And there's some other markers we go in to help classify with more solidity, but one of the biggest things to look at is when your body is metabolizing glucose, turning it into energy, it also makes carbon dioxide in that same process that it makes the ATP. And the more carbon dioxide that you're producing, the faster that you will your breath rate will become, because you off-gas that CO2 by exhaling it. So when people are not making ATP very effectively, like, for example, a diabetic, they will also have slower production of CO2. So I've seen diabetics with a breath rate as slow as 4 breaths per minute. And a lot of people think, oh, I thought that was good. Like, that's really zen, right? Like, I'm really
right,
chill.
Right. I'm at peace.
Yeah. And you can intentionally slow your breath rate down like that, but it's not necessarily a good thing to do. And if it's just naturally kind of slow, it's kind of an indication that your production of ATP is a little bit deficient. Ideally, we have a breath rate around 16, 17 breaths per minute or so, and that shows a nice healthy metabolic rate. His is down at 12, which is not horrible. Definitely seen much, much worse. But it is one little marker saying, like, oh, that could be improved.
It could be a contributing factor. It's not something screaming at us like, oh, man, that's really making you dizzy and fainty and...
Yeah.
Right. But it's enough to be a contributing factor, enough to consider it.
And that's not to say he should try to breathe faster on purpose.
Right.
It's saying, like, we need to do the work that is necessary to support the cell's energy production, which is like the mitochondrial function. And I think a big part of that in his case is having the sugar available to burn in abundance, which he's having issues getting the nutrients from his mouth to his bloodstream.
Right. Let's go over the next thing here, Ken.
Okay. Okay, but first, if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
Cool.
All right. I came across something called superior canal dehiscence syndrome.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Thanks. Which sounds a lot like what I'm dealing with, but is usually congenital. Is it possible for this to happen later in life?
So when I looked at this, it was basically they described it as a thinning or a complete absence of the part of the temporal bone that's overlying that superior semicircular canal of the vestibular system. So there's this stuff in your ear. You know, in our vertigo episode, we did talk a lot about how people sometimes get that little stone in their ear canal. It's kind of like a deposit of some type of calcium deposit or something like that. And it gets in their ear, and when it goes to the wrong place, they get real dizzy and run into the wall and can't stand up kind of thing. And sometimes people fix it by kind of rolling them around. Like, you remember that little maze game where you had a marble in there and you try to roll it to get to the maze? Like, there's chiropractors that do this with this stone thing in the person's ear, and they can get it to where they function better. So this is a similar type of situation where it's causing problems by this part of this bone either being gone or thinning out and stuff. So can it happen later in life? I have no idea. But one interesting thought is that when a body's not getting the nutrition it needs, there's a lot of places that it can pull from. Like, when you're not getting protein, sometimes lungs is the first place that the body will kind of break down and use that tissue. And other people can have other areas. So who's to say that your body may have, you know, this particular area could have gotten weaker or even broken down and started to cause a problem here. So I don't think this is the likely thing. It's just kind of a thought of, oh, that's a possibility. And it's one more possibility that improving digestion and giving your body the nutrients that it needs to actually be able to rebuild tissues correctly could improve. So just in case it was something like this, as you started to work on digestion, I would also start to implement some type of thing that would improve collagen intake or using bone broth, you know, almost daily, just to get all of those micronutrients and all those amino acid rebuilding blocks that the body can use. Do you want to add to that, Will?
Yeah, no, I'm fully on board with you. Like, I think from the outset, even last week when we started looking into his case, I think that his main thing is he's got to get it so that he clears his gut of the pathogenic flora that's causing all these exotoxins to hit his system, and then also he needs to reestablish assimilation of his nutrition, and without that none of these other symptoms are going to really go away. I think things will keep getting actually worse until he restores his ability to get nutrition from his food.
Right. So, like, this is a possibility. It's just not the thing I would point to first. But if some doctor did some test, how they figured this out, and they're like, yeah, this is it. That's weird. You didn't have it your whole life. Then I would think, oh, well, that makes sense that the body can break down wherever it wants to break down. So I think the steps we would take to improve the issues that are very apparent could help a problem like this if this was the freaky thing that happened.
Mm-hmm. All right. Today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com.
Audible.com.
Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
Okay, let's go.
Here we go. We're going on. I have the problem right now that I don't know what seems to work and what doesn't because I'm dizzy, dropping sensation on and off all day long, and I haven't been on any supplements consistently long enough to really feel a difference. The only thing I truly notice is that after a week of using mastic gum 2 grams a day and getting super obstructed and constipated, forcing me to stop using it, 2 days later I felt my dizziness was not as obvious or less amplified for a day or two, like it lessened somehow. Whether this is due to the mastic gum used for a week or whether that was some fluke that is unrelated, I will never know for sure.
Unless me and Will tell you.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, the one thing that Will has really been hitting on a lot is that it sounds like there's some gut issues. And mastic gum is really good at wiping out a lot of back stuff. It's like a natural form of antibiotic, really. So not only does it wipe out all the bad bacteria, but it can wipe out the good bacteria too. It's just taking all of that stuff out of the body. And it's, for someone who's leaning towards constipation, mastic gum could certainly make that worse. So the goal doesn't mean never use mastic gum. It just means you need to fix some things before you qualify to use mastic gum as part of the solution that Will is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the next question before.
But he could also use things like mineral draw. If the mastic gum was working, just use things to help him not be constipated. Like
right. You know, that's another thing he mentioned, that he used some mineral drops before and hoping that it might supply minerals to keep him from being dizzy, because I guess he found something that led to that too. The mineral drops, the concentrated mineral drops that we use, in order to improve a constipation issue, a person usually has to use 20 or 30 drops per glass, you know, 5 or 6 glasses per day if they qualify to do that. Oh, we forgot the water thing. Do you want to talk about some water
stuff? Yeah, if he's drinking that much water, he said 4 liters a day, then, I mean, he's probably washing everything out, all his electrolytes, all his minerals and stuff. He should probably be eating a little more salt, doing things that raise his, like the bone broth. All those things can raise your minerals, you know, those mineral drops, everything together.
Right.
You know?
But so his blood pressure is not correlating with someone who would be washing out all their stuff, but we don't know what's making his blood pressure in a good range. There's filth that could be contributing to that. If you're drinking a lot of this water around your food, you're also dilating your digestion further, which is not going to be helpful. We kind of like people to gauge how much water to drink according to their blood pressure and what's going on. So it seems like you're okay to drink water, but I would put it away from your food, and then I would watch your blood pressure as you start to improve other things. If you improve bile flow and the body can all of a sudden get rid of filth and it hasn't been, your blood pressure could really drop, because filth could be accounting for part of that good blood pressure reading. That may be like kind of a false reading. Do you have anything to say about that, Will Schmidt?
Well, we know like his systolic was kind of high, and his diastolic was kind of low. And we see that with the fight or flight state. That's one way that the body compensates for low blood pressure, is to constrict the vascular system. So there's less space that the blood needs to fill up. And that helps maintain a functional amount of blood pressure. So that could be one thing his body's using as like a mechanism or a coping strategy for an actually low blood pressure. So that, I don't know, that's one comment I have on that.
Yeah. Okay, let's hit this next question so we can talk more about the digestion stuff.
Is HCL going to make my stomach discomfort worse?
So this is a really common question, and initially it really can. Will, do you want to talk for a second about like how we see clients when they start using it? And, you know, it seems, Will and I always say that it seems like the people who need HCL the most have the hardest time getting started with it.
Yeah, and this is, you know, that's why I'm really grateful for knowing about D-limonene, because before we knew about it, I would have a lot of clients that totally needed HCL very obviously, based off of some measurements we saw in their chemistry as well as their digestive symptoms. And they'd start taking it, and they'd take like one capsule or two capsules, and they would feel like intense nausea, or they'd have to lay down like Wally did, and they'd feel super amounts of bloating. And that's because their stomach pH was really alkaline. If you think about, if you had a pool full of vinegar and you poured a little vinegar in it, you wouldn't really notice anything, right? But if you had a pool full of vinegar and you poured some baking soda into it, then all of a sudden you get this crazy fizz, like huge, like foamy mess, right?
That would be the most awesome experiment ever, just to pour.
But that actually is an experiment. We see that in like elementary school, high school volcanoes.
But I want to see it in a pool.
Yeah, in a pool, like a bunch of baking soda. Like it would just foam the whole neighborhood.
Right, right.
But basically, like it's kind of the opposite. So if you had an alkaline pool and you poured some vinegar in it, it would fizz up too. So when people's stomach is not acidic enough and the bacteria in there is creating ammonia and other alkaline sort of chemicals to protect themselves, then when you put a little bit of acid in there, it creates a huge bubbly fizzy mess that's nauseating. It can make reflux worse because of all that chemical reactions are creating foam and off gases and pressure that causes the stomach valves to slip open and the contents of the stomach to regurgitate. So that shouldn't happen. There shouldn't be bacteria in there. It should be very acidic already. Adding a little bit of HCl should be very, very uneventful. It should just right. be like, oh, I took some HCl and I don't feel anything. That's how it should be. But if you don't have enough stomach acid, or if your acid is being neutralized by bacteria, then it is a big deal. And it's why we really like tools like D-limonene and other antimicrobial agents to kill off bacteria, because then it can help the stomach pH to be more acidic. And the addition of HCl is then less traumatic.
Right. And what we see most commonly is that, you know, keep in mind that what we were saying before, the further down the line in your intestinal tract, there could be all kinds of bad stuff going on that can be a little harder to really fix. But in the stomach, it's not necessarily easy to wipe out a bacterial infection, especially if it's H. pylori. But it's not so hard to get the stomach to the point that it can acidify enough to digest food and to feel better. We see it all the time where people who start with HCl and feel horrible, if they just do D-limonene for like 3 or 4 doses, and we like to see people take it just in the morning because it's very pro-catabolic, and like see them do it like every other day, not even every day, for just 3 or 4 doses, and that usually wipes out enough bacteria that the person can put HCl in there and it won't create this fizzy mess, and it won't like cause this fizzy mess that pushes pressure back up the esophagus, giving you reflux. And a lot of people say, well, I never had reflux until I started using HCl. Now I have heartburn. And it's often because they were having the reflux. They just didn't feel anything because there's no acid in there to burn them. And then you add a small amount of acid to there. Now it's getting pushed back up and it burns them. But the goal is to get the stomach acidic enough to trigger that LES valve to close so the food can't come back up, and then that reflux situation stops. So listen to our episode on reflux at Kick It Naturally to understand that better.
You got a lot of listening and reading to do.
Right, yeah. So the main point I want to make with this is that there may be a lot of work to get your intestinal tract back to where it should be, but you should be able to figure out on your own, and maybe by asking questions in our free support group on Facebook, how to get the stomach to at least to get to a point where you can supplement with HCl correctly and kind of synthesize enough proper digestion that you can, one, feel better and not have bloating, pain, and discomfort after eating, and start to get some nutrition out of your food. A lot of people that are diagnosed with gastritis and stuff like that, it's a lot of it is just from discomfort of that bloating and the expanding and the pain that can happen with all those gases. The only time HCl is going to be much worse is if somebody had an actual ulcer in their stomach and you put that acid on that ulcer. That would be a painful situation, and you would know about it. But if you do have an ulcer in your stomach, that ulcer was very likely created by bacteria.
Yeah, it's not acid that causes ulcers.
We know that now. The medical world knows that now.
Yeah.
So even if you don't qualify to use HCl, you still need it because you have enough bacteria in your stomach to create an ulcer. So you'd have to do some steps to heal that ulcer, and then you could probably start using the HCl. But the point is that if there's a huge mess all through the digestional tract, you should be able to take enough steps to create some digestion in your stomach to at least start getting the benefits from that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of fat malabsorption making someone feel dizzy, brain drops, spinny, gastritis, reflux? Is it possible I'm not able to digest the fat I consume? It's possible, maybe. It's
totally possible and can contribute to a lot of different problems, but an inability just to digest fats is usually not going to make somebody have these symptoms. It makes sense that you would ask this question because you're having all of these symptoms and you're looking for what is the cause of all these symptoms. But the reality is that a lot of these symptoms are caused by different things that may be the result of poor digestion. Like, poor digestion is not going to push someone into an anabolic imbalance, but the inability to properly digest food may push you to eat more carbs or may push your body to use more carbs if that's the only thing that it can utilize. And those situations could push you into an anabolic imbalance. So it can be, think of this as it's likely more of a cascade of issues that have steamrolled and snowballed into all of these symptoms that you're experiencing. Right, Will?
Okay. Yeah. All right. We're on board. Yeah.
So usually when someone can't digest fats correctly, the really strong symptoms will be things like acne, nausea, because the body can't really use those fats if it can't emulsify them. So it just becomes a problem.
Your gallbladder hurts.
Yeah, gallbladder things. And that's usually a sign of bile not flowing well, and that's usually why someone can't process fats. So it's just not usually going to make someone dizzy or something like that. It's just another problem that's going along with all this poor digestion.
I just got my hair mineral analysis back, so I added it to my medical records PDF and wanted to show you, says my potassium is way high, which is something I honestly expected as I always found consuming high potassium food like avocado, coconut water, etc. would make me very, very dizzy.
So he's finding that those foods make him even more dizzy. And it's interesting that potassium is a mineral that pushes someone more anabolic than just about any of the other minerals. So that's just one factor to think about, that if raising your potassium intake made you worse, it could be that it was pushing you more anabolic, making your insulin even more powerful and more over-aggressive and dropping your blood sugar and creating all that stress to the body. That's one possible situation. But Will, can we talk for a second about how it's not always about your potassium intake. Sometimes it's about problems just making potassium be in the wrong place.
Yeah, and that goes into the intricacies of the catabolic-anabolic state that we talk more in depth about in our health coach course. But I think for a lot of people that without diving too deep into the chemistry of that, the important thing to know is that it has – the regulation of our electrolytes is important, and I'm glad that they're looking at numbers like that. And we can usually handle an excess of those sort of things just by like our kidneys like peeing out excess electrolytes of certain kinds that it doesn't need. And when we have just functional digestion and a regularly healthy metabolism, it can do a lot to sort of auto-correct those things. But it is good. I'm glad that she's paying attention to excesses like that. I would be more apt to look at blood in that respect for mineral levels than hair, because there's some things that can throw off hair analysis.
Right. There's a lot of different factors that can contribute to what is the body trying to get rid of.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's, you know, pushing that out through the hair.
I put a little bit less weight in hair also just because you can get very inconsistent lab results from hair analysis.
Are you erasing us, Will?
Am I erasing you?
Yeah, there was some kind of noise like somebody was erasing us.
Oh, no, sorry. I was cleaning like my laptop, had like a hair on it or something.
I see.
maybe that was over the microphone.
Right, yeah.
I never knew where the mic was on my laptop. Now I know. But yeah, so I think hair analysis can be like a little bit tricky in that respect. You can send it to like a bunch of different labs and get a bunch of different results. I would want to see a blood test before I said it for sure she had a potassium excess.
Yeah, I think he agreed that the hair analysis was not as active too, but it's still a piece of information. You know, there's nothing wrong with putting another piece of information in there as long as you know, look at other information as well.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. Glad you feel better. Bye.
But you're cured.
Yeah. Nailed it. So again, like there's obviously we're not telling you what you should do or making any suggestions. Obviously this is not a case where it's as cut and dry as many of the topics we talk about on the show.
It's probably more confused than ever now.
Right. Absolutely should be.
Possible outcomes.
But if it were me, and it kind of was in almost the same situation, and which is really why I like this case. I almost feel like I get to try and fix my problem.
Maybe
before.
Maybe he's your twin brother.
Could be. He was way better looking. Yeah, and all kinds of more jacked.
Hmm.
But what I would do is I would look at the things that are obviously a problem and start to work on them, especially the problems that are the core of all of health, which is digestion. So some of these things that you've kind of breezed over, I would get a little more aggressive with them and follow the steps like we talk about in the course and doing them that way to really fix digestion so that it can function correctly. Then as your body starts to get nutrients in and a lot of things could improve when that happens, see how the dust settles. And then you can continue to look at your numbers and see what changes. Are there things that get more whacked? Are there things that improve? When you have the ability to pull nutrients out of your food, does your blood pressure change? If you become less sympathetic, less in that fight or flight state, does your blood pressure go down to like 98 over 50? And you see that, wow, there really isn't a lot of mineral in there. I was just really in this fight or flight state, and that's why my blood pressure was in a good range. So a lot of things could become more clear as you start to work on things, but it's hard for things to ever get clear if you don't first fix digestion. And that's why we do this thing of, oh, I tried this, it didn't work. I tried this, it didn't work. Nothing really works if the body is not able to assimilate the things that you're putting in there. Does that make sense? Waleed? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? I think we got disconnected.
He's gone.
Yeah. He's been on the line this whole time. We were just holding his question. Right? 2 weeks. He was holding on the line. We should have asked some questions before. Okay, so here's the thing is let us know how this goes, Waleed. Come into the group and ask questions when you get stuck.
Send some pictures.
Yeah, Kenna really wants to see some pictures. But ask questions when you get stuck and then let us know, you know, what happens. Hey, this worked way better, but this is still all kinds of jacked up. And then maybe some of the people in the group can kind of point you in a direction that, why don't you look at this? Because you see that we didn't really tell you anything. We just told you some things to look at. And that's kind of the way that people really improve themselves, is just better understanding what to look at. The only information he had was that D-limonene made him real tired. So, of course, he would stop that. But now that you understand what it's doing, why that might make you tired, it gives you the opportunity to maybe try a few more doses and see if that gets worse or maybe a little better.
So take a nap. Let it do its stuff.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Naps are awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love naps.
But I did not when I was in this case because I took four a day.
Yeah. When you're like that and it's not, you don't want to.
Yeah.
Then it sucks.
So I really feel for Waleed and I'm really too, super
Waleed.
Excited.
I'm here for you if you need a shoulder to cry on.
Yeah. But I'm super excited to see how he does with this and I want to hear some good results to see if he can turn some stuff around too.
All right. Anything else, Will?
No, I'm stoked to hear how it goes for him.
All right. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com, or you can head on over to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net. He has a lot of like great pain management exercises on there and articles and some pretty pictures of himself as well.
Peace out, yo.
Bye.